What is up, our friends from the internet? Once again, it's the Tech Yeah Games podcast. Woo. I'm your host, Tony, here with my clicking co-host, Leo.
Nice.
I hear you're good at clicking.
I'm pretty good at clicking. I've done a lot of clicking in my life.
Maybe I shouldn't use inside jokes as the intro going forward, but
People can theorize about it. They could build lore. Like, what are we talking about? I promise you, it's not exciting.
There is a deep Tech Yeah lore that, you know, if people could uncover.
It's kind of like really Miyazaki, reveal. Though. Yeah, it's all, you got to read between the lines. It's very, like, in the background. But it's there if you want to put together the clues.
It's like aged oak. You know, you got to take it in slowly and kind of feel it.
Very complicated, complex, a lot of different notes.
Like a fine whiskey, right? we're dumb. It's okay. This is it's a big week though. I mean, we got a lot happening. E3 is next week.
I know. The hype is unreal. Everyone's so excited about it.
Yeah, the buzz is insane. I cannot believe the fever pitch of gaming news surrounding E3 right now. It is, it's quite a time to be alive. With that being said, Leo, what have you been playing this week?
Yeah, so this week I got into, I think you and I talked about this last week, the 3DS, you know? It's kind of, everyone's talking about the 3DS again. I think there was an anniversary, so I dug mine out and started playing around with it a little bit, and I started playing Zelda, A Link Between Worlds again, because I remember...
Yeah, 3DS is so hot right now.
It is. There was an anniversary. So people are talking about it, okay? It's the hot topic. Sorry, E3. It's all about the 3DS.
Fucking a good play on words right there.
Yeah, right? That's why I'm here. Make great jokes like that one. What a weird little piece of hardware, though, you know?
So great.
It is cool. Yeah, I like it. It is definitely kind of gimmicky, but it's also really neat. And I have the 3DS XL, which is sort of not the really slick one, the 2DS that flips. Like, the final one they put out is definitely way slicker feeling and looking. It's like, there's like no bezels, and it's a clamshell. This is 3DS, because I actually do, unlike apparently most people, actually really like the 3D. I think it's fun and cool. And one of the reasons I started A Link Between Worlds again is because I've only beaten it once, and people speak very highly of it.
That's a good game. I love that game.
Yeah, it's been interesting playing again. So I'm probably about a third of the way through. I'm past the intro and like into Low Rule and all that stuff. And it's a very cool game. I think I have very little nostalgia for A Link to the Past. Like, I've beaten it. I recognize that it was really seminal when it came out. But to me, this feels almost like it's sort of slavishly devoted to that game in a way that feels a little bit reductive, kind of. Like, it feels very like it's sort of retreading ground. Like, it's not it's like the least experimental Zelda. And I know they did the cool thing with the items where you can rent them, so you can access any item at any time, which is very cool. But that's not really like a reinvention of the formula, really. It's more of like a minor sort of tweak. I don't think it like fundamentally changes the way the game's played, really. So I don't know. I really like it. I think the music is great, of course, but it's also, again, very sort of throwback. It feels very much like an homage versus like a experimental new Zelda game.
The worst Zelda takes.
No, I don't think so.
As a franchise we both love so much, whenever I hear your Zelda takes, I'm just like, who is this guy?
Right? What do you disagree?
You love Goofy Island Zelda like so much.
Yeah, because at least that one's new and different, and like has a very experimental vibe, and at least feels different. This is a great game. Again, whenever we talk about Zelda games, I'm not saying like, this is fucking trash. I love it. It's great. If you have no nostalgia for A Link to the Past, I think it makes it feel, less important to me than I think maybe it does for a lot of people.
You think Goofy Island Zelda is better than Paper Zelda? Is that what you're saying right now?
I'm not saying it's a better game, but I do
think
it's...
On the record, is that what you're saying?
I think it's more experimental, and it's more wacky and sort of more more original. That's fair to say.
I mean, I think that's fair to say. Original is in that we put other Nintendo characters into the Zelda game, if that's original. It's weird. I'll give it that for
sure.
It is
weird. And also, we talked a little bit about this. Like, I think, and this is in no way unique to this Zelda game, but like the villains are pretty weak in Zelda games, I've noticed. I never really thought about this before because it's sort of like the classic formula, but I know that's not their shtick. Their shtick is making amazing you know, amazing single player experiences and like fun. Like, obviously, it's probably my favorite franchise ever. So I'm in no way talking shit. It's just kind of interesting in retrospect to be like, oh, that's just not a priority for them and never has been.
Sounds like you're talking a little bit of shit, if you ask me.
No, I'm just noticing things that I've never
kind
noticed
of shit
before.
Talking, like, you know, kind of a fucking Zelda hater over here. I thought Link Between Worlds was really great.
It
I
is
it was really
it is
good
great.
Game. And like you though, I only played it when it came out. So maybe if I played it now, I would share a bit of your opinion that maybe it was a little overblown or a little too much of a Link to the Past clone.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the thing to remember too is like in retrospect, it's easy to see those games side by side. But the reality is those games were so far apart in their release, right?
Like, absolutely. Like 20 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So almost like exactly 20 years, actually.
Yeah, like retreading that space with a bit a more of a modern touch on a console that like the whole world had. I can see why that was a recipe for success, right? Yeah. I can see why that was beloved because it took something that was beloved, kind of, you know, it's almost like if they made, it's almost like an RE2 remake, totally. Right? Where it's like, we took this thing that everyone loves so much and then kind of tweaked it and made our own version of it. And, you know, all new puzzles and story, of course, but, yeah, I think it really worked in a way that not a lot of Zelda games, modern Zelda games have.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with any of that. I think if you like A Link to the Past a lot, it helps.
Yeah, I agree.
And I do like A Link to the Past.
Because it's the best Zelda game.
It's clearly not the best Zelda game, but it's definitely like, it's an amazing, wonderful game.
Wait, what do you mean clearly not the best Zelda game?
It's not.
Like, where would you rank it?
I would say it's like it's probably the most important Zelda game next to the first one, but that, I don't know if that counts. But it's not like Zelda's done a lot of interesting things since then. It was like 25 years ago.
I agree. Yeah. Where would you rank it if you had to put it? Like, I'm not saying you have to list every one, but top three, middle of the pack, towards the bottom. Where would you?
I'd say in the top five. The problem is I didn't play it when it came out. I didn't play it till a few years ago. So I my perspective on it is different because I wasn't there when it came out, you know?
Yeah, see, that's why you have such bad Zelda takes, I'm telling you.
I don't know if it's bad. I would just say it's a different Zelda take. It's a different perspective.
It's uninformed and ignorant.
I think if you play all the new games and then you go back and play an old one, you can see how fucking awesome and incredible and formative it was. And some of the best sound design on the Super Nintendo. It's an amazing, incredible game. It's just, you know, you've seen a lot of things since then. That's all. Anyway, all that aside,
I think the story beats are really good too. But
no, they are.
I'll tell you this.
Awesome.
I think it's definitely top three.
Yeah, that's fair.
Breath of the Wild being one of the other three.
Agreed.
And then I don't even know what I would make.
I don't either. That's where it gets complicated.
Yeah, I think they would be. Those would be one and two for me. And I think I would put maybe like Ocarina or something like as number three. I don't know. I don't even know what. I don't even think Ocarina is like that. Great.
Well, like, I think Ocarina is a lot like A Link to the Past. It's like when it came out, it was insane and incredible and really like absolutely formative, but it's not the best to go back and play.
I think Ocarina is much harder to play now than Link to the Past.
I agree.
Link to the Past still has quite a bit of charm.
I agree.
On top of what it offered originally, I think Ocarina now is like this is a little bit, that's kind of yikes. You know, like,
there's
to
a
go
lot
back
that's
to,
aged poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, all of that to say, this game's awesome. But what I really wanted to point out before we got sidetracked was it makes really good use of the 3D in a way that not a lot of games did. Because I feel like at this point, people were kind of like they do with so many Nintendo consoles. Like, oh, this is cool. But anyway, who cares? Like, it's really just a very powerful DS by the end of it. You know, no one was taking advantage of the 3D. But this game does a really good job. Like when you're, you know, the Tower of Hero, where you're kind of jumping up from floor to floor and the whole game's you're just trying to get to the top of this tower and like Link flies up towards the screen. It does a really good job of taking advantage of the 3D without it being clearly designed around that in a way that I really enjoy. I think it does a really good job with that.
I remember turning 3D on for that game because it was kind of so essential to some of those puzzles.
Yeah.
It looks pretty good. I mean, you know, my problem with the 3D wasn't that it didn't work. It's just that the implementation wasn't very good, right? Like, it was so common to kind of get a bad view of it, and it kind of hurts your eyes and, you know, like makes you a little motion sick, like, which I think was a little detrimental, but I do think it was used well in this game.
Yeah, if they had waited, like, one more year, that probably would have helped. But, no, I agree. I totally understand why people don't love the 3D, but I think when it's working, it's very cool. And honestly, it's just cool. Like, the technology is cool. It's like, well, it's working. It's doing what it was supposed to do. Even if it is finicky. Thank God they give you the option to turn it off, though, because if they didn't, that would have been really obnoxious.
Yeah, and the scaling slider was pretty genius, right? That you could still implement some level of it without, like... I mean, I know it does end up kind of being an on and off switch, but even so, you can kind of...
That's true.
You can kind of tease it out to a level that works for you. Comfort level. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, and it was fun. Like we talked about, too, it was really fun just opening up my 3DS. And I looked at my photos that I had taken, like, back when I had, when it was new in 2012 or whatever. And, you know, the photos are just horrifically shitty in terms of quality. But they're, it was really neat. It's just fun going back into old consoles. And it is neat. It kind of highlights how Nintendo has moved away from that in a way that I understand and is probably the right move. But I kind of miss it. Like, they're so quirky and charming. There's all these weird little apps and... it's really fun. If you have a 3DS and you haven't opened it in 5-6 years, I recommend just open it and poke around a little bit, and I bet you'll have a smile on your face.
Yeah, you'll definitely find some things that you're like, have completely forgot about, right? Because they were so minimal at the time, right? But like, it's always fun to see these like time capsules of like, oh, like this is what I was doing. Like, this is who I was, you know? Like, not a lot of consoles give you that opportunity to like see your personality at the time inside of them.
Yeah, that's really neat. And there's some great games on there. So yeah, I'm definitely going to finish off Link Between Worlds. Very cool. Very good game. The other game, though, that I really played a lot of was I finally got sucked into Resident Evil 8.
Now you love it.
I do. I have a fair amount to say about it, but I'll try.
The hater has been reformed.
I'll try and... Cause I think what happened was I went through it just... you know, initially through the story. But one of the reasons I love Resident Evil so much, and I've talked extensively about this, is that the replay is really fun. And this game, most of the new Resident Evils have really implemented this pretty genius system where there's just this huge list of challenges that allow you to unlock currency, which allows you to like buy OP weapons, essentially. And this game has so many different challenges. So those can vary from like, you know, kill 200 enemies with a handgun to... break all the windows in Lady D's castle. So some are more esoteric than others. Some you'll just get by progressing through normally. Some are much more specific, like shooting down a certain amount of treasures or having a certain amount of money, which was really fun to try and get because you have to like do math and be like, well, if I sell this and buy this, it'll get me close. So anyway, long story short, getting through the game and starting to unlock the infinite weapons is really where it clicked for me. And also being able to skip the cutscenes, because then the game becomes very short, like Resident Evil games are. The last run I did, I think I did it in 2 hours and 30 minutes, something like that. So that really, it really unlocks what's fun about that game. And what's fun about the game is, you know, is the action. Running through with an infinite magnum and just capping werewolves and just shooting the boss and just running through the game is immensely entertaining. And looking at your list of challenges and just clicking them off one by one is great fun. Just like the Resident Evil 3 remake also did this. And I also enjoyed it for that reason, was it was just really fun to go through again and again and collect all those challenges and become insanely overpowered.
Do you feel bad about being so wrong about Resident Evil 8?
Well, no, because I wasn't wrong. The issues I
guilt in your heart.
The issues I had with it were the second half of the game sucks. And I still think that's true, actually. Like, the second half of the game is so much weaker than the first half. Like, every time I get, even when I think I'm on my fifth playthrough now, and every time I get to the factory, I'm like, fuck. Even though I know exactly where to go and what to do, it's just like, this isn't fun. It's ugly. It's confusing. It's boring. I hate the factory. And the part before that is like a bunch of insta-deaths with the stupid fish monster. It's just not a compelling antagonist. And then, yeah, the whole last half of that game is just not very good. Once you're running through it in 2.5 hours, it doesn't matter as much because it's only like 45 minutes and you're kind of working on it from a run perspective, like trying to be very efficient, so it becomes less abrasive. But I still do believe that game, I've never played a game that starts off so strong and has such a quick decline in terms of plot and in terms of actual fun gameplay. I don't know why Lady D's castle, which is by far the highlight, is so cool. They should have put that at the end and made it way longer, because the factory is the longest part and it's by far the most boring and the least inventive and the dumbest and the least scary. So all those things are still true. I think now I'm just really focused on the mechanical side of it. And in that way, it totally nails it in the way that most Resident Evil games do. So yeah, that's my turnaround. I've spent a lot of time unlocking all these challenges and in fact have almost all of them at this point. I'm going to do one more playthrough on the hardest setting, which is very hard, and see if I can actually pull it off. But yeah. So anyway, I've turned around in a lot of ways. I love the game as a game now, but I still think my criticisms as like a Resident Evil story and like level design, all that stuff, I think that's still true. I've just managed to find fun in despite of that.
I don't know. I think you were wrong.
You haven't even played it.
I think you're talking around your wrongness.
No, I'm not wrong. The factory still fucking sucks.
You know, but you love the game now.
I do, yeah.
You love that big little baby.
That baby is fucking scary. It's still scary even now. Like, I'll mute the game because I can't stand babies crying. So I mute the game and I know exactly when he's going to appear, right? Because I've done it 5 times now. And I still, every time I see him, I'm like, God damn it.
he's kind of cute though.
Well, that's what's so scary about it, is he is vaguely cute in a way. They nailed that shit. It's so cool. And like when the baby's chasing you, it's not like screaming, it's going like wah da da. Like, it sounds like it wants to find you to play with you, which is even creepier than if it was but just then it's screaming.
Gonna eat you.
It does eat problem. You. Yeah, because it's a baby, and babies just like push shit in their mouth, you know. Like, even that part of it feels very like that's what a giant baby would do, you know. Ugh, it's so cool. That part's
I watched
awesome.
Some videos on that game, and the thing that stuck out to me was there's a giant baby, and it chases you. Yeah. And when you get in the elevator, you get away, it cries because you left. And I thought that was very sad. I thought that was very sad for the baby.
Well, it's chasing you, and you're like running, and then, it's right behind you the whole time. And since it's first person, you have no sense of where it is. It's really effective. Even now on the 5th playthrough, and I know exactly what's going to happen, it's still every time I'm like, please open faster. I know it's fine. I know what's going to happen, but still, it's really unsettling. That whole sequence is
just
really cool.
He's just a baby. Like, he doesn't want to be down there. You know? It's like he just wants someone to pay attention to him.
Yeah.
Right? And then you get in the elevator and you just bail on him and he's fucking upset, man.
Well,
I get it.
He's not real.
I mean, that's true. But, you know, then nothing's real.
I mean, right? I mean, even in the story of the game, he's not real. Obviously, he's not real because he's a video game. But, I mean, even for Ethan, he's not real. And that, I think that was the other thing that kind of got me back into it, is I actually looked into the lore a little bit more, because I was like, wait a minute. I think by the end of my first playthrough, I was rolling my eyes so much that I just stopped even paying attention to the story. But actually looking into who these people were definitely made me like it more, too. Like, what is Lady D's deal? Like, why is she so big? And who are her daughters? And learning all that was really fun. I mean, it's typical Resident Evil kind of nonsense, but that whole story arc's kind of interesting. I think the other big criticism, and then I'll stop talking about this, is the protagonist still fucking sucks. Like, Ethan is so lame and bland. His only characteristic that's remarkable is like kind of how stupid he is. So being boring and stupid is not a great combination. He's very disappointing compared to really any of the other protagonists. Even the lame ones at least were remarkable. So, yeah. That's my tight 10 on Resident Evil 8.
He's got strong hands, though, so I'll give him that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he's... Well, anyway, no spoilers, but all of that shit's explained. People act like they didn't explain it in the story, but it's not like, you know. Fucking Resident Evil 8 haters, aren't they the worst?
Right, they're the worst. That's what I'm saying. There's so many people with this unfounded criticism for what's otherwise seen as an amazing game, and I wish they would just fucking, you know, give it a chance. Get real. Kind of get into it before they make these, like, harsh statements about the game. It seems misplaced if you ask me.
I was thinking about how Resident Evil 7 is like a better game by every metric, but I've definitely played it way less because it's not as fun. It's actually scary and like intense, and I think it's better in many ways, but I would definitely way rather play 8, so I don't know exactly what that means, but yeah, it's interesting. I have complicated feelings on it, but certainly there's no denying that I've played through it 4 times and I'm about to start a 5th playthrough today, so obviously it's doing something right.
But you're a complicated man, you know?
So
that's
true.
That's just the nature.
So true. What videos did you watch? Was it just like Let's Plays or?
No. So I watched a donkey video on Resident Evil. It's kind of jokey, so it was less scary. And after that, I watched like a boss, like all the bosses. So I wanted to see what the bosses were like. But
yeah,
bosses were pretty, I don't know, kind of underwhelming, to be honest.
I agree. The boss fights are not great. The second one where it's the dolls, that was cool because it's not really a boss fight. It was interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it's pretty standard, like, ooh, big,
you're in a room
big
with
gross
a lady.
Monster. Yeah.
Or a monster, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that all you got to play this week?
Yeah, I played a bunch of Final Fantasy 14, etc. But, you know, I think I've taken enough time. Thanks for indulging my Resident Evil 8 talk. But, you
of
know,
course.
I'd really like to hear, other than Resident Evil 8, what you played this week.
So I actually didn't play any new games really this week. I was kind of scoping out, but I didn't find anything to really like tickle my fancy, you know?
Yeah. Now that Elite Dangerous is off the table.
Yeah. Now that Elite's off the table, completely off the table, you know, I was kind of hunting around. I played some normal. I played a lot of Apex like I always do in Final Fantasy 14. Of course.
Of course.
I think my Paladin's at like 76 now. So
Jesus Christ. It took me three years to get my Paladin to 80. That's funny.
Well, and I've been doing other stuff too. Like it's but how's your level 80 life now? Did you beat the story and everything?
No, not yet. I'm real close. I got, like I said, I got sucked in a Risen Void, but I still did some. I think I probably have like 5 or 6 more missions in Shadowbringers, and then of course there's all the post-patch stuff. But yeah, I'm real close. I'll talk more about it next week when I'm actually done. It'd be fun to
hammer.
I'd like to talk about that villain a little bit. But yeah.
Yeah, hammer that shit out. I want to get into it with you.
I will.
What else did I play? I played some Modern Warfare.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't played in a while. I thought I would jump back in. I did a little bit last week, too. They kind of added a bunch of, like, some Rambo, John McClane stuff to it, like skins. That game is far out, man. But, yeah, it's fine. I don't know. Like, it's still what it is. Honestly, I found myself playing Modern Warfare multiplayer more than Warzone. Like, it's just... in my opinion, so much better, right? Like Modern Warfare multiplayer is so good.
It makes
me sad for Black Ops multiplayer, because I was like, why can't this be good? You know, like, why can't I play the new one? But is there just, I just have no draw to play it when Modern Warfare is so good.
Yeah,
you know. What else did I play? I played Overwatch.
Oh yeah, I played a little bit of Overwatch too. Gotta get those skins.
That game sucks, man.
I don't agree.
Yeah, it's so bad.
What's bad about it?
Roll queue.
Yeah, I don't do that shit, so I don't know about that.
Like, I didn't realize, maybe they always did this, but they have it in like non-competitive too, like in the just regular casual mode. And yeah, it's so lame. Like it makes the pace of the game so extremely lame, right? Because it really does just turn into like... this very formulaic kind of holy trinity like system, where it's just like tank, healer, DPS kind of shielding off against each other at a choke point for the entirety of a match, right? Until everyone has ults, and then you do like this kind of who's got the better ult positioning, and then it's like that's that point, let's do it again on the next point.
Yeah.
And it is fucking so boring, and it really, like, you know, I think a lot of that fun in that game was like playing weird characters and doing, like, you know, like I played Zarya, and she seems okay as long as you have another tank. But if someone's not willing to play like Reinhardt on your team or something, it's like she's kind of seems complete like useless in a lot of ways, because she can't like body tank, right? She doesn't have a shield to throw up, and
she has, you know, like, bubble.
Yeah, but that's almost more to generate damage. Like it'll soak some damage, but not very much. And it's just, you know, so it's like, I don't know. Is it not, now that there's role queue, can I sort of not play her? Cause in some ways I might play her as like a third tank. Right.
Yeah.
Or like Genji, like who's ever going to get to play fucking Genji again? You know, like, I mean, I'm sure at like higher levels you could, but in a pug game, it's like, I don't know. It just seems like you'd want like, real consistent DPS, and not one of your two DPS players
diving
in the back line, right? And being Genji, right? Like that seems like it seems toxic to choose that if you get DPS queue. And it's just like, yeah, this sucks. Like the whole like thought process around it is just like unfun. You know what I mean? And I get like you play like the I forget they call them the fun games, you know.
I don't engage with that ever. So I have like, I totally hear what you're saying. I think you're right, but I never engage with that side of Overwatch. So I just, there's none of those criticisms apply to me at all, or the way I play the game, you know.
Yeah, but it's just, that's what I mean. Like I get that, but that's what I'm talking about. Isn't like competitive. It's just normal Overwatch. Like if you just click play,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Like.
Yeah, you have to go out of your way to, yeah, if you were just starting, that would be like where you ended up, which is, I totally agree, that's not the fun Overwatch, which it should be.
Yeah, it's just, I'm shocked, well, I'm not shocked, I am surprised that they allowed the game to be so no fun, and I'm not surprised that that game has lost most of its following because of it. You know, like, it makes total sense that people just aren't hyped to play the game in its current state.
Yeah, right? I think they flattening that certainly pissed people off. And again, I don't engage with that part of it, but I totally hear you. And then I think also really leaning away from the lore, which, say whatever you want, people really liked those characters and thought it was really cool and interesting, those shorts and all that shit was, that generated a lot of hype. And to really just be like, no, we're just doing esports now, and all that's like super on the back burner. Anyone who would have stuck around because they wanted to see what happened to Mercy or whatever, you know,
yeah,
they would have also left. So it was like, hey, those were two strengths and you got rid of both of them to try and make esports happen and it didn't work. And now it's sort of this like, yeah, I totally hear you. I can see why it went from all-time high to wherever it is now. I have no idea what those numbers are, but
yeah, I did a quick Google. I don't know how much I trust it, but the Google said 35 million was its peak active.
Wow.
And 2020, its active was 10 million. So yeah, not
that sounds
not
about right.
Dead, two-thirds. But that's pretty, yeah, but that's a pretty steep decline for a game that is so prominent, you know. Yeah.
And it was, and it imagine, really does feel like they just threw it to the wolves to be like, no, we're, this is esports now, no matter what, at any cost. And this is what happens.
And esports never works that way.
Yeah. You know what I especially mean? Like, for a game like this, like flattening it out and making it more boring. That's yeah, not
there's
a good
never
way.
Been, there's never been an esport where like the developer themselves have been like,
yeah,
here's the rules. Yep. Here's how you guys can play. This is the esport, go. You know, it's like that never works. Like League of Legends started with like local tournaments and people making their own rule sets.
CSGO.
Counter-Strike was the same way.
Totally.
You know, it always seems to be based on like a community kind of public beta tested rule set that then gets developed into popular play. And yeah, I think they just were so wrong on this. And you know, it just seems like Blizzard's had a lot of outside pressure being like, you got to make this an esport, right? Like, this is how it's going to earn money and do what you have to do. And, you know, I see how these meetings must have happened, being like, oh, if we got to make it an esport, we got to tune this and do this. And what a fumble. Because I also loved, you know, it was just crazy looking at my Overwatch stats and being like, oh, like, when was I playing this game? And it was like, such early seasons, right? Like season 6 and 7 plat, and then it's like it's season 35 or something right now. Yeah. You know, and it's like, oh my god, like I'm ancient history in this game. Yeah. You know, like
it's so true. And like, if they ever took away the Quick Play Classic, and like essentially really all I play is Quick Play Classic and Mystery Heroes. I like Mystery Heroes because it's just, you know, total RNG, but it just allows you to play all the different characters, and like you were saying, balance and meta, all that shit just goes completely out the window, and I get to just really play in a chaotic environment, which I enjoy. But yeah, if they were to ever take those two away, I would immediately never play Overwatch again. So I'm glad they're at least like giving us a little corner. And since I only engage with that small corner, I always forget that, like, yeah, the rest of the game is pretty fucking lame from what I understand. Yeah.
That's so weird, right? Like,
yeah, it is
to
weird.
Think about this fact that, like,
it's such a misstep.
If they removed this old mode that they're trying to phase out and have like put in the corner, like that's the only thing I'm willing to engage with. Yeah. It's like a really just like a bad sign, like a sign of like a really poorly designed, you know, game.
Yeah, or like a well designed game that they slowly like just smashed down until it became more and more boring and sterile, and it's very weird. All the creativity kind of got pulled out of it in a way that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, poorly managed. You know, it's funny, like the thing that's been popping into my head like so much this last week thinking about video games is like project management. You know, like I think it's something
everyone's favorite topic.
Yeah, like it's something you don't really think about in games and don't really talk about. And I'm just starting to believe like that's the only difference between good games and bad games.
Yeah.
You know, like is like how is this project being managed? Like you look at like what Sony's been able to accomplish with all its single player titles and with studios that have not had that success in other places but have somehow thrived like under their ownership or their like their management. And it must be such a unique skill set to be able to like let these games kind of thrive and have the right amount of of oversight and then the right amount of freedom, you know, and the right amount of funding, like knowing what this game's potential is to earn while being made. Because, you know, like, I just, no one else is really nailing it that way. Like, maybe Nintendo, right? Like, in their kind of slow-paced sort of way to do it. But you look at these, like, Microsoft games and, you know, a lot of third-party games, and you're just like, yeah, they're, like, they don't... Their talent is clearly there. These people are clearly talented that make these games. But somehow, like, the scope and the management of them just gets fumbled or, like, you know, like, it's incorrectly done. And you look at, like, Activision Blizzard, and it's very similar. It's, I feel like Overwatch, that's what makes me so concerned about Overwatch 2, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just can't imagine that game's going to be good, right? Like, I can't.
Because,
because they can't manage Overwatch 1, and it's so simple in comparison.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah,
it is interesting. It's like they made every wrong decision. And it's funny, you know, again, from sort of an objective perspective, as someone who plays Overwatch pretty regularly, and I'm sure, you know, I'm not like some people, but I'm sure I have like 300 hours in the game over the course of several years. And I play, you know, once a week to get to skin or to hop in for a few games. I have zero interest in Overwatch 2. Like, I'm like, I couldn't possibly care less. Because I've sort of like checked out of the whole game except for those two simple modes. Which is funny, I haven't really thought about it until you brought it up, how like you said, it's just really one small corner of this game that I really enjoy and love and have a blast with, but that's like, you know, 20% of this game, and the rest of it is really upsetting and bad and a bad portend of things to come. So my excitement for Overwatch 2 is zero. And the idea of like PvE and like, we're going to restructure everything. I'm like, no, don't do that. You can't even, like you said, you can't even manage the first one. Like, hey.
Yeah, it just seems like they're trying to overtune it again. You know what I mean? Like, more so, or in even a grander scale than they did with the first, right?
Yeah.
To be like, now we really know what we need to force you guys to do.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like,
that's what worries me.
Yeah. It's funny. You talk about Overwatch reminds me of when I used to play, what was it, Modern Warfare 2 online. And I didn't really like the normal multiplayer that much, so all I played was hardcore search and destroy, right? And it's like, you just find these little corners.
That's the whole
game.
And then it's like, oh, no, it's
the whole game.
Yeah.
That's all I want, right?
Exactly.
Like, yeah, it's so funny.
That is funny.
So that's most of what I've been playing this week. Nothing too out of the ordinary. I played a little bit more VR table tennis. I think that 11 table tennis is still the best VR game I've ever played. So everyone should play it. Everyone should buy it. It's cheap. It's so good. The physics are so good. It feels like table tennis. It is like one of my favorite things to do is just, I get off of work and I literally just stand up at my desk, push my chair to the side, put this thing on and just volley balls with the computer for like, you know, as long as I can stand it basically. And it feels great. It's so good. It's one of my favorite things to do.
That's cool.
So
I gotta check it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Do you think you'll ever play Resident Evil 8?
No.
It's not scary. Except
scary
that baby. But like,
yeah, I saw that baby. It's not. And I saw a part where you're like in a very dark like basement, and not interested in that either. I think that's like pre-baby, right? I think that's right before the baby.
Yeah, that whole
baby.
Sequence is baby maybe. That whole sequence is very interesting. There's no weapons, so you're not in any real danger, but it is pretty scary. That's the only scary part though.
Yeah, not into it. I do want to hear Lady D call me man meat, but I'll never get that chance because I'm afraid.
She's fucking awesome, man. Like, the more I play the game, again, all the internet stuff aside, like, she's a really cool, scary, like, giant lady. She's really awesome. Every time she shows up, I'm like, she's really scary and looks so cool, and everything she says is hilarious. She's a great character.
Yeah, she seems like it. I think she's really cool, too. But, not for me.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we will talk about some news, and we will talk about E3 coming up.
Finally. Yeah,
finally. Leo, did you have a good break?
Yeah, I did. I had a pretty good time. I've been thinking about E3 just nonstop for the last couple of weeks, so I'm so excited we finally get to talk about it.
I've been thinking about Lady D for the last 3 weeks, so I was excited we got to talk about that in the first segment.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad I could deliver for you.
Thanks. So before we get into E3, real quick.
Ugh.
All right. I know. You're on the edge of your seat. So there's a lot of God of War talk this past week. It's a
good game.
It's a very good game. But God of War got delayed until next year. Yeah.
I didn't know about any of this. It was in RE8 mode. I didn't even check the site. So this is all news to me.
So God of War got delayed into next year. I mean, that's it's a bummer, but whatever. It's fine. Yeah,
not even remotely surprising.
Yeah, the part of that news that I found disappointing is it's going to be on PS4 and PS5, which is a real bummer, right?
That sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. So is Horizon. And we knew Horizon was going to be, but... Yeah, it really sucks because, you know, it really shows that this game's going to be technically limited, right? Like, I can't imagine anything that would run on my turbojet PS4 is really going to blow my mind on my PS5, right? Because my PS4 can't. It can barely run Hot Shots Golf or Everybody's Golf, as they call it. So I just can't imagine it doing, you know, like, keeping up. But, I mean, we'll see. The reason the story came up is because, you know, it's weird. When somebody... So Alana Pierce went to work for Sony Santa Monica now after, I remember she had Funhouse before this, but she's kind of been everywhere in the gaming sphere.
Yeah, she kind of shows up all over the place. It's cool.
Yeah, so she took some heat. It seems like it was just like one person tweeted her some, you know, go die bitch shit, which of course is completely uncalled for. But and then Corey Barlog's like, I made all these decisions, right?
So it's not Alana Pierce's fault. Like,
yeah, so clearly. That's why I saw kids. But, you know, I was kind of having a discussion with someone else. Like, it is strange kind of to attribute any of that vitriol to the actual delays or anything, right?
Yeah. You
know, I think it's pretty obvious the psychology behind this is a small person with no, that feels irrelevant to the world, right? Like, kind of justifying their existence through these touch points with someone they feel has like validity. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, in that sense, I think it is a bit, it kind of plays into their narrative to, you know, post that conversation and then have Corey Barlog come in and be like, hey guys, this is on me. You know, like it does kind of vindicate them, right? In their,
I am a big deal.
Yeah. I am a big deal. Right.
I'm important.
Yeah, I mean, it seems clear, like, that's a psychology. This person is not concerned about delays. You know what I mean? They are concerned about
their... Yeah, they're not the voice of the gaming community.
No, yeah, they're concerned about their insignificance in the world, right?
Yeah.
Where if they just embrace nihilism, right?
Yeah, man, come on, just be a nihilist. Just chill.
And found agency through their insignificance, then, you know, then they would really have a place. They would know that sending fucked up tweets...
Alana Pierce
has no meaning, right? Like, it's irrelevant to the universe.
Just go outside.
Yeah, so just go outside or don't, or who cares what you do? Go take a bath. Yeah, whatever, right? Do what feels
good. Do nothing. That's what it's all about.
But yeah, I was a little bummed about the cross platform. And you know, bummed about the delay. But
yeah, that is a bummer. I'm not surprised by the delay, but the PS4 thing is, it sucks. I mean, actually, I guess I'm not a developer, so I don't know if it's, I mean, maybe if you just put the PS5 version front and center and then just half-ass, like, port it down and, you know, I guess I could see how that could work, but I suspect that's probably not what they're doing. And I do get it, like, there's still a lot of PS4s out there, and I'm sure there's Sony was like, hey,
come on. Yeah, I don't know. We're under this pretense that, like, PS5s aren't in the wild, and they clearly are. They're clearly, like...
Yeah,
abundantly in the wild, right? And you know, it just doesn't seem like this was an issue PS3 to PS4, right? Where every PS4 game had to be PS3 compliant, because
probably
because
there's a lot fewer PS3s, though, to be fair.
Yeah, sure. You know, I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying it's having the success of your previous console be your limiting factor in your next one, I think, is a recipe for disaster.
I agree. And also, it's been a while, right? It's been a year.
It's been a while.
Yeah. It's like, dude, and at some point we gotta like cut it loose.
Yeah, and the you know, I think it would be easier to stomach if they didn't if the controller wasn't so next gen and they weren't touting this next gen storage solution, right? Like, if they didn't add these things that were like, these are next gen only things, but you, it's not really going to matter because we're going to make this game for PS4. You know, like, I think that the dichotomy of those statements really kind of makes this seem even more stupid than it is. You know,
I totally agree with you. It is lame. Actually, you just brought something to mind. Quick tangent. Something playing Resident Evil 8 on the PS5. You know, I haven't played on other consoles, so I had no context. You know, it runs great. The saves are instant. It loads quickly, but you just don't think about it. I was watching a speedrunner using a PC, a nice PC, and I noticed there were loading screens, and I literally had never seen the loading screen before. Like, I was like, holy shit, I've never seen that. I didn't even know the game had loading screens, which I know is sort of a meme. Like, oh, my system's so fast, I can't see the tips. But it was very interesting to be like, holy shit, there's a whole part of the game I didn't even see because... it really does apparently load very fast, even faster than a nice NVMe SSD. So anyway, that was kind of cool. Sort of vindicated a little bit.
It is funny when I tell people that, like, I really like my PS5, and I feel like in some ways it outperforms my PC, which my PC is dated. I have a 1080. You know, like, it's not like my PC is top of the line. You can't get video cards. They're like, that's impossible, that's stupid, or whatever. And it's like, no, like, in a lot of ways it does. I mean, in some ways it doesn't.
It just depends on how you count performance.
Yeah, performance, right? Yeah. And as far as pure processing power, I will agree, it is not faster than my PC. But in the way you play games, in a lot of ways, it does. Like, you know, like, I was having a lot of problems with Warzone in my previous processor, right? Mm-hmm. And it runs great on my PS5.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that could be because of upscaling, and it's technically running lower resolutions. Like, it's not running it at 2K all the time, right? But regardless, my experience
is better to play.
Better, right? And because it makes smart decisions about how it serves that stuff to you, right? Absolutely. You know, it's funny. And I think this is another example, right? Like, oh, there's loading screens in this game?
Yeah.
Like PC Master Race, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, and like, even like the counterpoint to that would be like, yeah, well, I can run 120 frames per second. And you're locked at 60. And I'd be like, true, I guess. But also, you have loading. I mean, that's the point, right? It's all about how you count performance. But I will say, I think I'd rather play it on my PS5, certainly, than my computer. I have essentially the same setup you used to with a 7700K and a 1080. So, you know, it's a long in the tooth for sure. There's no question. If I were to install Resident Evil 8, I could probably run at a higher resolution and probably higher frame rate, but I guarantee it would not play as well. So, yeah, it's just whatever you think is important.
And probably a higher frame rate. I mean, let's be honest. Like, it would probably run at like 80 to 90 frames. You know what I mean? Like, sure, it's better, but it's not going to be locked 144.
No.
You know, like,
heavens no.
Heavens no, but heavens no.
And then have to see a loading screen.
I mean, that's what the saddest thing about PCs right now for me is that getting DLSS cards is so hard, right? Because only
that's really the most
20 series and higher. And that's the thing I would want the most, right? Being able to have like smart resolution scaling so you really can lock in those frame rates, to me is like the real thing I feel like I'm missing out on.
100%.
All right, let's move on to the real excitement. E3 is coming. The schedule is here. Saturday, June 12th, so a week from the day we're recording, you know, probably 5 days from the day you're hearing this. E3 will be upon us. Is everyone hype right now?
Yeah, I mean, it has been fascinating. Like, you know, we've been very sarcastic this episode, but it has been fascinating to see the just insane lack of hype for this
You've
show.
Been sarcastic?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've been sarcastic. Yeah, I didn't mean to put words in your mouth.
I love E3. I don't know what you're talking about.
I do too, but yeah, it's been fascinating just to see everyone's like, oh, yeah, E3's coming.
Yeah, you can register. If there's fan registration for...
Are you registered?
No, I don't know why you would.
I don't
know what... I'm going to look at...
Maybe you get like a cool PDF.
Fan registration. Get your free access to the greatest video game showcase on the planet. Apply for credentials here. I'm gonna apply. Let me see what
does that mean? Like, would you get you go into a Zoom meeting with like the developer of some Square game?
I'm gonna tell them to fucking die or something, right? Like, I'll be toxic. Yeah.
Like, I want to talk to a lot of peers.
Yeah, give me fucking
get Corey Barlog on the horn.
Put that tart a lot of peers on the. Okay. Password must be at least 12 characters.
Well, you remember when they got hacked.
I know, but Google Even Chrome's like, I'm gonna recommend you a password no one will ever guess, is like, that's too far for me. I don't know. Like,
it's... They really don't want to get hacked.
Yeah, I guess.
What would that even mean if you got hacked for the digital, like...
It's funny.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to sell that information, so why does it matter?
That's true.
All right, Saturday, June 12th. So this is all from Polygon, the article I'm reading. Michael McWherter and Samit Sarkar. Okay. I'm sorry if I mess up either of your names. Saturday, June 12th, E3 organizers say the event will officially kick off with a broadcast of a pre-show at 10 Pacific, 1 Eastern. And then Ubisoft will be the first up. Right. Saturday at 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, with a pre-show before. Updates for games such as For Honor, Watch Dogs Legions, and The Crew 2.
Jesus.
The main event. Yeah. The main
event will be scraping the barrel. Jesus.
Gameplay footage of the next Tom Clancy Rainbow Six game. And Ubisoft will deep dive. They're going to deep dive it in their other, in their forward event. They're also expecting announcements for Far Cry 6.
Yeah.
Riders Republic.
Oh.
And
finally.
New content for Valhalla and Siege.
Oh, cool.
And they're going to talk about their film and television division with an upcoming Werewolves Within movie.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Ubisoft.
Any of that you want to touch on? Because
this is not interesting. I mean, you know, some of those games are cool and all, but yeah, I couldn't be less interested.
Yeah, that tease is very uninteresting. I mean, maybe they'll have some secrets in there, of course, but.
Yeah, of course. They'll be like, yeah, maybe they'll talk about the Division mobile game finally.
I probably won't watch that. Let's be real.
Yeah, I probably won't either. This is perfect. Like, I will read I will scan the article afterwards.
Yeah, I will definitely
see if there's anything really exciting in there.
I'll definitely see if anyone tweets anything that seems exciting out of that.
And keep in mind, this is coming from someone who just put in 80 hours into Assassin's Creed Valhalla, like, you know, and I still don't care. So that's saying something.
So after that, Gearbox will come up. The only teaser here is Borderlands developer Gearbox will hopefully have plenty to show during the press conference.
Jeez, even the writer's like, yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know what to put here.
Yeah, I'm trying to get, I got to make this a section. So.
Colonial Marines 2, please.
Yeah. I have a section, I have an H2 here, so I have to put something below it.
I've totally been there.
Yeah.
Full sympathy.
Sunday, June 13th. On Sunday, E3 viewers can expect presentations from Microsoft, Square Enix, Warner Brothers, and 24 Entertainment. 24. PC Gaming Show and Future Game Show also stream Sunday. I think this is the one I'm the most interested about, is the Xbox and Bethesda showcase.
Starfield.
I think this is a real make or break moment.
I agree. Yeah, we talked a little bit about this before, but I agree. I think this is like, we kind of said this last time, and they
Chosen had nothing, right?
Yeah, yeah, they fucked up, I think. So I agree, even more so than before. Like, you guys, you gotta do something. What do you think it'll be?
I mean, realistically, what I think it will be is some more teaser, like some more obtuse teasers. And
yeah, I agree.
And something about Halo, like, and some games that are coming that no one cares about, some like medium level, like,
yeah, so probably coming on probably a battle pass. Royale or something.
Yeah. But yeah, I think most of this will be pretty weak.
Outriders expansion.
Yeah. They might have like one of their Bethesda Game Studios games like on the cusp, like, I don't know. They seemed kind of far away last time too. Yeah, I don't know. I that's what I mean. Like, I don't feel like anything is that, like that close, you know, through this. And so I think if they were like, here's the games, they're coming out in the next few months, boom, 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 get hype, I would be like, that's pretty cool, you know, but yeah. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be,
that would be like real best case scenario, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think that's what we're going to see, right? I think we might get like one release date on one game. And I think if that is, it would probably be late in the year, you know?
Yeah, probably another like Fallout 76 expansion and probably another, I bet they'll show like a Starfield trailer or like some sort of, you know, slightly more interesting teaser.
Yeah, more than a title card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And maybe what's the Obsidian game that they had? I forget too. But I imagine that's kind of the one they probably are like trying to get out the most right now, right? Like my assumption is that just because of Bethesda's track record, that Starfield is not as imminent as people want to hope it is, right? Yeah. And you know, they're gonna try and lean on some other stuff.
Yep, I 100% agree with you on all of those points. I'd be very surprised. And there will, like, I bet $1,000 there will be no mention of Elder Scrolls.
None, yeah, or maybe like another, like, and we're still working on Elder Scrolls, you know.
Look,
like,
here's a high resolution Khajiit.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I will say this: if you're a developer or a publisher and you want people to stop telling your employees to die, maybe just shut up about stuff that's not,
like, just don't talk about it,
right? Like, I get that you want to develop this hype cycle and sell pre-orders and all this stuff, but it really does put your employees in a really negative state, right? Like in a bad position.
It's a rock and a hard place for sure. It's like, yeah, I totally agree. It's really unfair to the developers who are actually in the trenches.
Yeah, if you care, if I mean, I don't think you have to care, right? But if you do, if your point is like we care about our employees, then yeah, take it easy on what you announce, right? It's easy to not disappoint people when you don't lie to them in the first place.
Yep.
You know. All right. So after that, Square Enix Presents, that'll be at 12:15 Pacific on Sunday. A 40-minute show will feature announcements from a new game from Eidos Montreal, an update on Platinum Games' Babylon's Fall, a closer look at Life is Strange True Colors and Life is Strange Remastered Collection, and details on Black Panther: War for Wakanda.
Now, that's a Marvel or Avengers expansion, I assume.
An expansion for Marvel's Avengers. Yeah, you could have let me finish.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you could have, but whatever.
I had to, you know, interject.
Yeah, that sounds great because I don't like Life is Strange. I don't want to play Marvel's Avengers. So we'll see what Montreal has. You know,
yeah, I was about to say maybe Deus Ex, but probably not. That would be awesome, but I'm sure it's not going to be that.
I'm sure it's not too, but hey. If it happens to miraculously be, you nailed it.
That
you know,
be so cool.
So that's cool. Now we're on to Monday. So Monday's a little more down to earth. Monday's show kicks off with a broadcast starting at 8 a.m. Pacific. Capcom, Take-Two, Mythical, Freedom Games, Razer, and an unannounced indie developers will have presentations throughout the day. Who are these unannounced indie developers? Right, like that's.
Yeah,
that's what I want to know. Like, are these?
Did you say Razer?
Razer.
What are they doing? The hell are they up to?
There's no teaser here for Razer, so I'm assuming it's some kind of like, you know, probably their fucking
new speakers,
masks that never came out or something, or you know, like a, I don't know, something dumb, something so dumb.
Razer's, they seem like someone who would like start a game studio and never make a game, you know?
Yeah, and like have a Android tablet that they pretend is a console.
Yeah.
Right? And be like, this is the fucking...
This is the future.
The Razer fucking Viper station.
The Goliath.
Yeah. It's the number one place to play games. And it's like, this is an Android tablet, right? Like, yes, it is.
Yeah.
NVIDIA Tegra.
Yeah, exactly.
So Capcom and Take-Two. Capcom will deliver a presentation focusing on upcoming games. Officially, Capcom has the Great Ace Attorney Collection, Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin, Resident Evil 4 for Oculus, and Pragmata on its release list. But Capcom also reportedly has more Ace Attorney and Resident Evil games in its plans, according to a leak. Take-Two will also have a showcase. Details forthcoming.
Just that H2 again.
Yeah. That's what's weird. They didn't have an H2 specifically for Take-Two. They made a choice to put that sentence in, which...
Someone's throwing shade.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Tuesday is the final day of E3, and this will have Nintendo, Bandai Namco, and others. That what surprised me so much, this is next week, and everything's like, and others will join. You know, it's like, who are these others? So Nintendo will hold a new direct presentation at E3 where the company plans to reveal new details on upcoming Switch games. Nintendo will then offer a longer look at its Switch lineup in a new treehouse. Roughly 40 minutes and focus on Switch software, mostly releasing in 2021. So stuff coming out this year, which is good.
Yeah, which Bandai, means no Breath of the Wild.
Bandai has no details. What if they shadow drop Breath of the Wild too?
That would be awesome, but they won't. Oh,
I would be so hard if they did that.
Well, they're good. Yeah, I thought they were going to release Switch Pro before E3. Whatever happened to that theory?
We still got a week, dude.
You think they're going to drop it in the next week?
No, but we still got a week. I'm just saying.
Well, if they don't, I assume they'll talk about it here. Right?
Or what if they just scrap it? What if, like, fuck you guys for leaking it? We're just not going to
do it now. That would be so awesome if people just, they won't. What if they just started, anytime someone leaks something, they just cancel whatever it was. Doesn't matter what
That's what they should, say that at E3. They're like, we were going to release
a Switch. Yeah, it was going to be fucking sick.
That's going to be $300, same price. We're just going to make it the new Switch. And you guys fucking ruined it, so we're just not going to do it anymore. We're over it. We're tired of you fucking
Enjoy whiners. Your Tegra, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. You think gamers are fucking toxic? Wait till you see what we can do. Right?
That would be amazing.
I would love it. That would be the second most hard I would be after the Breath of the Wild 2 announcement. Thursday, EA Play Live. Who cares about EA Play Live? I mean, there's no details here, but they're doing a thing on Thursday as well. So that's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, it seems pretty I'm sure there'll be some cool stuff in there, but just even judging by the stuff that they put front and center and released as like what they're going to talk about, it's all real unexciting stuff, huh? Like even the companies themselves are like, oh yeah, fuck E3. I guess we better put something together. That's kind of the vibe of this whole year is just like, oh yeah, E3. Forgot.
Yeah, and I feel like these publishers are like, you're still doing it? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, we don't have anything. You know, yeah, like, this exactly. doesn't seem like they're just... like gonna bring what they got, you know, kind of
like throwing it all in a folder, put it on flash drive, and like, yeah.
I know Keeley's doing like a summer games thing, so maybe that'll be more interesting. Like maybe that's kind of where the shift's taking place. But yeah, this E3 stuff is not particularly interesting. I mean, like we said, I'm interested in what Xbox and Bethesda share. Like if it's like, I really do feel like they're gonna have to start making an impact very fast, right? Like. Come up with some plan to like really kind of goose that software assortment and like get stuff to people, right? Because just like, I don't know, I don't understand how people seem so excited about, you know, oh, we'll have someday we'll have games for, you know, like it all seems so far on the horizon for them, right? For that partnership.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like they really got to start getting software onto those machines, right?
I agree, and every month that passes, it's like, hello? Like, you can't just buy Bethesda, that's it. Like, that doesn't count as a year's worth of news, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not even getting the games they already had planned on other consoles out, right? Like, where's Ghostwire? Where's Bullet? What is it fucking called? You know what I'm talking about. Deathloop. Where's Deathloop? Where's Ghostwire? Where are these games that were announced years ago, right? That are technically in line before these things that you're like saying will be on Xbox, you know, and like you guys can't get shit done. Like, I don't know I don't know where this $4 billion went because you guys haven't released anything.
Yeah.
Like nothing. Bethesda hasn't put out shit. Right. And so Doom Eternal, is that the last game that came out of any of their studios?
I'm sure there was something else, but yeah, that was certainly, I think, the last like high profile title.
Yeah, and that was, what, last year sometime?
Yeah.
And then everything else is just delay. I understand it's a difficult time, you know? But it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, right? It's like, oh, it's a difficult time. It's like, so everything's just pushed into infinity for you guys? Because that
why didn't that happen to Sony?
Yeah, that makes that partnership seem a lot weaker, if that's the case. And Sony has somehow found ways to get some games on their machines, including Ratchet and Clank, which is coming very soon, which is, I think, the first big, like, mainstream game they're releasing, right?
And that's not going to be on PS4, right?
No. Yeah. So, Returnal, Dark Souls,
Demon Souls,
and Astro are basically the only current, like, or Demon Souls. Demon Souls, Astro, and Returnal are the only, like, standalone PS5 games right now.
Yeah.
And Ratchet will be the next one. So, but yeah, I mean, at least they have some.
At least they have something. Yeah, because you could be like, that's not very many. And be like, well, yeah, but look at the competition.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Ratchet will be their first, like, mainstream kind of mascot. Like,
that game's going to do well, I bet.
Yeah, it's going to blow up. Everyone's going to own it. I'm going to buy it just because it's, like, the first one of those for PS5, right? Like, yeah, it's the first one that you really, like, you'll buy it, you'll beat it, right? Because it's, like, the game you got. You know, like,
it's like the old days when you'd get one game.
It really is. Pretty exciting. But yeah, E3 seems interesting. I guess the last couple of years, I mean, not last year, of course, but even the last few years before that, like, I have always kind of viewed E3 as this, like, what are these companies going to do? You know, like, it hasn't been about, like, the excitement of seeing new trailers. It's been about the kind of skepticism of what some of these companies have had to release and, you know, like, where they're at as a business. And this one, more so than any, is, like, a real peek into kind of where these people are.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of what E3 has turned into, not just for fans, but for the industry as a whole. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that's it for us. Is there anything else you want to jump into before we get out of here, Leo?
No. I think we can talk more about E3 next week, and then I guess the week after is when we can really go over all the juicy details. But
next week we'll be in the throes of E3.
Yeah.
So
we'll be reporting live from our rooms.
We'll be reporting live from our bedrooms on E3. all right. Great. Well, thank you guys for listening so much. If you're excited about E3, hit us up, TechYeah Podcast. At Gmail, Twitter, Facebook. We would love to hear from you. Thanks for spending some time with us. Enjoy your week and go play some games.